In this episode of Another Zelda Podcast, David and Celeste get together again to talk about some of their favorite Deku's. Welcome to Another Zelda Podcast. I'm your host, David Geisler. I'm your co-host today because I am joined by my co-host, Celeste Roberts. Celeste, how are you?
I'm good. I'm so happy we are meeting in person again.
I know. It's great. It's been a fun way to kind of pepper in a couple more episodes at the end of season five here. I'm in Louisiana. I'm in your hometown of Thibodeau.
Yeah,
that's really neat. I flew in yesterday and we're taking advantage of this situation and we're putting down some Zelda tracks.
Yes, he
we're
made
recording
a,
some episodes.
David made a long and arduous journey all the way to Louisiana. He didn't actually fly here. He just walked. I'm just kidding.
Is that what it was? That's what he did? Yeah. Yeah, right. I think you can take a train here from Chicago, isn't that right?
I think my boyfriend Timmy was telling us last night, he looked up the Amtrak route and I think it's about a 17-hour train ride.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the drive is, I don't know what the drive is. But anyway, yeah, I came in and it was fun. It's such a treat to actually be in person. For the past 2 years, you and I have been doing episodes here and there, but we've been doing them online and, you know, over a Zoom call or whatever. And it's so nice to just be in the same room and be talking about this stuff. Tonight, we're talking about Deku. Our favorite Deku. It's been a long time since we've done a favorite, I guess, species episode.
Yes.
We had favorite Gorons back in like the 8th episode of season 1, way back in the day. And I think in season 2, we did favorite Zoras, Kate and I did. And then I stayed away from the favorite, you know, cultures, groups, species, whatever you want to call them. And I felt like it's just time. Let's just do it. And so we're doing a day. I think we still have to do a Gerudo. We still have to do a Rito eventually. I think there's a few that we can take a look at. But we went for Deku. I'm not sure why. Maybe just because they show up in Majora's Mask. I'm not sure. Oh, and spoiler alert, they're kind of only in Majora's Mask when you're speaking about like specific characters that are Deku. I'm getting side eye from Celeste. Maybe there's more that I haven't thought about.
They're not necessarily named, but I have some that stick out to me that are not in Majora's Mask.
I can't wait. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. I think I'm going to jump into our listener feedback right off the bat. Let's do it. Looks like there's like 5 or 6 here today. The first one is a YouTube comment by Ricardo Mata for the Hyrule Fantasy episode, season 1, episode 14. Now, this episode was the very first, kind of once a season, I try to do a behind-the-scenes episode, what I kind of call a behind-the-scenes episode, where I'll literally research a game and see how much I can learn about it and try to put it all together as a bit of a story and put my notes together. And I usually then basically dictate those notes to Kate or whoever my co-host is at the time, and we tell the story. Well, this was the episode where I told the story of the making of the very first Legend of Zelda ever. And to be honest, it was a highlight for me. I loved making this episode, recording this episode, and doing it. So the Hyrule Fantasy, which of course was the name of the original Legend of Zelda before it came out, this is what Ricardo Mata has to say over on YouTube. Discovered this 5 days ago, and I'm listening to at least 2 a day. This episode so far is my favorite. Well, thanks, Ricardo. It's mine too. Though the items episode was a close second. I remember spending so much time playing the first game when I was young, visiting friends who also played the game to see how they did at it. Looking forward to catching up on all your episodes. Hope this goes on forever.
Wouldn't that be nice, David? Like, even if we're in our 90s. Still talking about The Legend of Zelda?
We're in season 5, and I don't think we're even close to running out of things to talk about when it comes to Legend of Zelda. Because there's so many different perspectives and avenues to take. Yeah, fine, you can review the games, which we love to do. Yeah, fine, you can build a bunch of top 10 lists, which we love to do. Yeah, fine, you can, you know, speak to... Well, okay, fine, okay. But what you can also do is, in many ways, because The Legend of Zelda has spanned almost 30 years and, you know, arguably 22 to 25 games, depending on if you're counting all the remakes and whatnot, it really can sometimes become the podcast can become really a conversation about the history of video games anyway. You know what I mean? Because we have all of these different Zelda games that are existing at different points in the history of video game culture and creation and medium that I think there's so much to be talked about. It's really great. Anyways, moving on here. Frolf Luberg of our left a comment on YouTube for our Bars and Restaurants episode. Now, that was this season. That was episode 5, season 5. That Ryan Kuhn from the Brothers-in-Law podcast actually was the guest co-host on that show. And Froof Loberg here says, I just wanted to stop by and say hi. Oh, and say that I love your show. It's great to listen to. Also, both your laughs are so iconic by now. I think he's speaking to Kate's laugh and my laugh. Kate has a laugh that drives me crazy in a good way forever and ever and ever. I am excited for more Spirit Tracks in Phantom Hourglass, as they were basically my first Zelda games. Love the great show, and thanks for doing it. I still need to play Spirit Tracks. It's my one Zelda game that I have not yet played.
Wow, at all.
Like, at all. I booted it up once. I put the cartridge in on my 3DS. It was a DS game, but I put it in my 3DS. I got to the title screen and I realized, wait. I did it at a point in my life where I was probably playing another Zelda game in the middle of making this show. Maybe it was a year or two ago. And I realized, oh, no. I want to play this when I can give it my full attention and not just like play the first dungeon by accident and then put it down for 2 or 3 years. So I'm waiting for that moment. I kind of remember what happened. I had put it in, but then I finally got A Link Between Worlds for my actual 3DS. And I started playing that, and I didn't want to play two games at the same time, especially two on the same-ish system and all of that. Sometimes I do bounce around from Zelda game to Zelda game, but then I can get a little... Then you start remembering events from wrong games and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Celeste, I wanted to ask you, bars and restaurants, do you have a favorite bar and or restaurant in any of the Zelda games?
I can't think of its name. It's the one on Windfall Island in Wind Waker. Is it just called the Milk Bar?
There is a Milk Bar, yeah. Yeah, it's above the shop, right? It's the one where you go up above the shop where you get the sale.
Yeah, it's not... Okay, the one in Majora's Mask is called Latte, right?
Oh,
is that correct?
It might be.
Or is it just called the Milk Bar? I'm blanking. But I know they serve
Chateau
Romani. That's what they serve over there. But the one I'm talking about, and forgive me, this is what happened.
We'll just say the Milk Bar above the shop. It's okay.
The Milk Bar above the shop. I really like that one because you have this... I'm assuming there's a window that you can't see, but... That the view of the great sea while you're drinking a nice cocktail or maybe some coffee. How nice would that be? What about yours?
Oh, I don't know. I don't spend it. It's so weird when I play Zelda games. I actually don't spend too. So I don't know. I think I usually go into like these like cafe. Oh, I have a favorite. I know what it is, but it also shows up. Okay. Yeah. I have a favorite, but I have it. It's going to show up in a future episode because I have it in my show notes for a future episode, but I guess I'll just also speak about it right now. This is a little bit of a teaser for a future episode that you and I are doing in a few episodes from now, of which I've already put my notes together for. And I think my all-time favorite cafe / shop or bar or restaurant experience. It's the Hyrule Cafe in Castletown in Twilight Princess that's over to the left side of the main experience, the main fountain. Mm-hmm. The reason I sighed just now is because the truth is, from a story point of view, not much goes down there, not much happens. But its rendering and the way it was designed and the way it's built is, if it were in real life, yes, that's the cafe I would be at. And I'll just leave it at that because I'll return to that a little bit later in a future episode. Let's see here. Moving forward, Dylan Worcester. Over on, this looks like it's probably Instagram, would you say? Maybe Twitter. This might be Twitter with those. I don't know. Anyways, Twitter or Instagram. Mm-hmm. Dylan says here, D_Worst38. It might be Twitter. Hey, Kate and David, I found AZP a couple months ago, and since then I've started watching all the episodes from the beginning. I just finished season 2, and hearing your guys' love for Twilight Princess made me go out and play it for the first time myself. It really is a great game. You've also motivated me to play Link's Awakening, so I think that one is next. Thank you guys for such an awesome show, and keep up the amazing work. Celeste, I don't know if I've ever really truly asked you your opinions on Twilight Princess. You know, Kate and I are pretty vocal about how before Breath of the Wild came out, it was absolutely our favorite Zelda games for each of us, and sometimes that's a little polarizing. Where are you with Twilight Princess?
I think I might have said it before here or in an episode with Boss Rush Network, but I've said, Twilight Princess is my favorite one, but I have to be honest, it kind of fluctuates between Twilight Princess and Ocarina of Time as my top Zelda game, I guess, if I had to pick one. Mm-hmm. I love Twilight Princess.
Many view Twilight Princess as kind of a spiritual successor to Ocarina. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, you know, it's kind of like Ocarina made again, even though it is so different.
With the Hero Shade, you mean? Especially?
Well, I just remember, you know, when... So Ocarina of Time came out, and then after that was Majora's Mask, and that was very different than Ocarina. Mm-hmm. And then after that was Wind Waker, which was aesthetically and functionally very different from Ocarina. Mm-hmm. And when Twilight Princess came out, it was... You know, sometimes... I've said it in the past, but when I first started playing Twilight Princess, its visual style and the way it played was what I always imagined Ocarina to be like when I was a kid playing Ocarina.
Yes.
So it was like a further realization of that similar, of a similar style of storytelling in a similar style of world, you mm-hmm. know? And yes. then in many ways, kind of Breath of the Wild now weirdly has become that for me from Twilight Princess. But anyway.
I love that version of Link the most. Out of all the versions of Link, aesthetically, that's the most pleasing.
I think it's the oldest version. I think he's 14 or 18.
Twilight
or
Princess?
Yeah, the Twilight Princess Link, I think, is the oldest version of Link okay. in any of the games. He's essentially a teenager, mm-hmm. where in many of the Zelda games, he's a kid. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that, Dylan. Let's see. Moving on over on YouTube. Oh my gosh, here's an oldie, an old cut. Episode 4 from Season 1. Our Breath of the Wild end of game thoughts. We had both, Kate and I had just finished Breath of the Wild and we thought we'd do, we don't usually like to do like timely episodes on AZP, but we had finished and we thought we'd discuss it. Green Girl here says, I started listening to your podcasts recently and I love them. I've never been the type to play many video games and Breath of the Wild is the only Zelda game I've played. Very interesting. But listening to your podcast has given me such a cool insider look to it all. I played Breath of the Wild for the first time probably 3 years ago, and I played consistently for a while, but stopped recently. Now I'm waiting for the arrival of Breath of the Wild 2. It's also so awesome hearing you guys talk about future ideas when we now know what the next game will be about. So I think this was at a time, yeah, I mean, maybe this might even be post Tears of the Kingdom, honestly, this comment, the Tears of the Kingdom reveal. Mm-hmm. I'm pleasantly optimistic about Tears of the Kingdom. How are you feeling about it all?
I'm really thinking about taking off of work the day it releases. I've never done that for a video game. I have heard people do it, and by golly, I think I'm going to do it.
Will you make a video series about it and we'll put it on the YouTube channel? No? A little personal, a little audio journal. We'll put it on our Patreon.
Oh, that would be so bonus dear episode. Diary.
That'd be cool. That'd be fun, actually. I can think about it. Well, thank you, Green Girl. Thank you very much. Super cool. I love when we hear these stories. We get this from time to time where someone's like, oh, I didn't play much, but I played like one Zelda game. And because of AZP, I want to try the other ones. And that is, if this podcast has one mission, it is to celebrate and encourage people to try out other Zelda games that they haven't played yet. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I'm so happy to hear that. Let's see here. This is Savannah Watson. A little bit longer here, so I'm going to just kind of get into it. Savannah Watson on our favorite Zelda TV commercials episode, season 3, episode 1. Savannah here says, hello. Oh, this was an episode that I did with Dan McCoy, and who now hosts the podcast Fan Fiction for 6-5 Media. Savannah Watson says, hello. I just wanted to chime in. I played my first Zelda game this year. Wow, similar theme here, perhaps. I played my first Zelda game this year, Breath of the Wild, and I have become obsessed with the lore and history. It is my recent hyperfixation. I've since played Skyward Sword and Ocarina. Well, fantastic. I hope to play them all. I love listening to this podcast. I work from home as a cookie decorator for events, so I have a lot of time where I listen to music or podcasts. That's cool already. I wonder if she's ever had to decorate Zelda-themed cookies. And I have listened to the first 2 seasons in the last week or so. Need I say again, a lot of time. Just wanted to comment how I thought it was ironic, maybe sad, how you mentioned both wanting to do meetups more and limit Skyping for that year. Listening to it in 2022 now, of all the crazy things that went down, I couldn't help but chuckle. It was a total opposite. Anyway, love the podcast tremendously, and I'm excited to catch up all the way. Yes, Savannah, I can speak to that. This was our first episode of season 3, Celeste, where you might even recall we did have to get a little bit more creative yes. with how we started recording the episodes. And it's true that this episode was technically, this is old enough now, this is 2.5 seasons ago, this episode was recorded before, at least before Chicago shut down, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. for COVID. And it's true, we were trying to, we were saying, oh, season 3, yeah, we're going to do meetups, we're going to do live episodes and all that. And now, you know, we're 2.5 years later, and it's finally the world, over the last 4, 5, 6 months, has finally kind of returned to some version of normalcy. And it has inspired me to try to do some meetups and things like that. I guess this comment here is a way to like kind of light a fire here and remind me mm-hmm. that it's something that we did prioritize a while back. And then we just kind of all tried to survive the last 2 years mm-hmm. and it would be awesome. I mean, meetups are fantastic, you know, and Chicago, there's enough people that live in Chicago in the Chicago area that might be possible. You're going to a little meetup, a video game convention this Sunday, aren't you?
Yes,
here in Louisiana.
Yes. After we drop you off at the airport, unfortunately.
I know, that means I can't go.
I know. There's a little event called a Nerd Swap Mini, mm-hmm. and they usually have a regular Nerd Swap. It's a new thing, but it's going to have a trunk or treat, and there will be different artists and people who sell video games and other paraphernalia. So I'm excited.
Yeah, that'll be neat. I actually am sad that I'm missing it. That was one of the reasons why I'd kind of come down here, but it's okay. Over on YouTube, Nick Danon said, "Hey, David, this is on the episode Most Bothersome Baddies, which I recorded with a fellow Zelda fan in Chicago, Alyssa. Hey, David, another great episode. I only recently discovered this podcast, and I've been listening to it every day at work. It really makes the time fly by. It's been interesting listening from the start in the year 2022. I can kind of piece together when each episode came out based on when you start talking about newer Zelda releases like Link's Awakening Remake. I hope that the Skyward Sword Switch version comes out in time for you to review that game." Ooh, this might be an old comment. It sounds like you'd really like the changes they made. "Here's a useful tip for dealing with those pesky Octoroks in Breath of the Wild. With a well-timed shield parry, you can bounce those rocks right back at them. And at a close enough range, you don't even need to parry. Simply having your shield out should be enough to bounce the rocks right back at them." I had no idea.
Huh.
I've never parried a rock back at an Octorok in Breath of the Wild.
You haven't done, like with the, oh my goodness.
When they start shooting stuff at me, when they start spitting their rocks at me, I usually just run away. I take out my bow and arrow and then I shoot them and then I'm good.
The Guardians, like how you can parry the laser with the Guardians?
Oh, I've tried that for sure. Yeah, I just not with the. I mean, I've parried in Breath of the Wild, but parrying the Octoroks stones.
Specifically.
Yeah, I've never tried that strategy. Okay. Not bad. I'm gonna give it a go. All right, Celeste.
You ready?
How are you feeling about favorite Deku?
I have to be honest with you. This one was a little challenging.
It was so much more difficult than I ever expected it to be.
I do want to be honest about it, because, and it's not that they're not cool, but how do I? They aren't given as much spotlight or limelight as other races in the Zelda series. And I don't know if you're going to be speaking about this, but they kind of remind me of the Zora a little bit because...
Whoa, you just blew my mind.
There are versions of Deku that are benevolent.
Oh.
And there are Zora that are benevolent. And then there are Zora that attack Link. And then there are Deku that attack Link.
Yeah.
So...
I think another similarity there is both Deku and Zora originated as essentially just like low-key enemies in the Zelda games, and then eventually were matured into actual cultures and stuff in future games. And actually, that speaks. So you know, it's interesting if we're gonna kind of piggyback off this Zora Deku thing. The Zora really became their own in Ocarina of Time, of course. That's when we started. And technically, there's a difference between River Zora and Ocean Zora, and that's kind of how Nintendo motivated the lore of the more advanced culture. But like at this point, Zora are basically like almost like elves or something in Zelda games. You know, like there's this high echelon of some kind of like, what's the word? You know, royal, almost royal is what I was trying to say. Royalty structure where there's a king and all of that kind of stuff. But with the Deku, they did exist as the first time we saw a Deku scrub be not necessarily a straight out enemy is in Ocarina of Time. And actually you do use your shield. Wow. This is kind of on point. It's not the Octoroks, but it's the Deku. They spit seeds at you. And if you bounce it back at them, they basically become little vendors, little shopkeepers, and they can sell you a shield or whatever. And then if you don't want to buy or you do buy, they just go back down in and they mind their own business. So they're not, I think that's the first experience where Deku isn't just full on like an enemy. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
It's interesting. I do like that you have to it's interesting. It's amusing that you have to attack them to have them almost surrender and say, okay, I'm going to sell you something. Please spare my life.
I mean, yeah, that's, that's another way of looking at it. Yeah. They're like, hey, get out of here. Hey, get out of here. I mean, now that you got I can sell you this.
Yeah. I see you mean business. So I'll mean business too.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I never framed it that way.
I think of it as like, please spare me.
I think I will forever see it that way too now.
Tainted your view.
It's okay. It's fine. But the Deku really became a culture, I guess you could say, in Majora's Mask, in my opinion.
I have to, yeah, I do have to agree. I do.
If you know, yeah, to say that they're like the represented like the Gorons and the Zora. Well, obviously in Majora's Mask, it's a little bit on the nose because the Deku mask, the Zora mask, and the Goron mask are the three main kind of other cultures that you experience.
Which is interesting that they chose the Deku, who can also be enemies.
Well, yeah, that's what we're right. Yeah, but that's a little bit like a year or two before they chose the Zora, which previously were enemies. Let's stay on our theme here of the episode, because I don't want this to turn into a deep dive episode just yet. But this is technically favorite Dekus.
Got it.
Deku. I even accidentally have in my notes favorite Deku scrubs, but that's not obviously the case. There's many. Deku is a, I guess, a species or something like that. So I have a few here. Some of them are many of them are from Majora's Mask. Some of them are not. And why don't we, since I've been kind of talking a little bit more with all this intro stuff, why don't we have you drop one of your first favorite Dekus?
And I do want to stress this is not in a particular order.
Nope, these are just things we're thinking about.
Okay. They don't necessarily have a name, but they are in this area called the Forest Stage in Ocarina of Time. Do you know what I'm talking about, David?
Are you talking about Deku Babas?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm. No. Okay. So I absolutely love this part. It's kind of hidden. It's in the Lost Woods, I believe. You might see some little butterflies floating above a little piece of grass in one of the sections that you're running through, and you fall down this hole.
Okay.
And there are these little young Deku who appear, and they want Link to entertain him.
What?
And there's even a sign, I think, near it or somewhere in the Lost Woods that talk about like a fashion show or something.
No.
You've never done this?
I don't. I kind of rip through. Like Lost Woods, I usually don't. In Ocarina of Time, I don't really want to be in there. And I don't spend much time, so I kind of just book it to wherever I need to go.
Okay. You know how you can acquire different masks? Like the Keaton mask and the skull mask and spooky mask and everything.
You are blowing my mind right now.
So you wear different masks and they'll have different reactions. So they'll do one of five things. May I read what they do?
Please. Okay. I'm enthralled. Captivated. Okay.
So the best mask to wear is the skull mask. They will be amazed and give Link a reward. And this is what one of them says. Like they gather around Link and they're all excited. All of the young Deku scrub brothers agree. You look exactly like our sacred forest totem. As an offering from us, please accept these Deku sticks. We will also enhance your carrying skills. Abracadabra, alakazam! So, let me see what it says.
Do they increase your wallet or?
No,
not your wallet.
Oh, okay. The young hero will receive an upgrade which allows him to carry more Deku sticks if he wears the skull mask. They're delighted. They absolutely love it. But now that again, I'm not trying to turn this into a deep dive episode, okay, but forest totem. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's a skull mask? It's the
skull mask.
It's like a forest one?
Mm-hmm. So if you wear the mask of truth, they will hate his mask, but they will give him a reward for trying, like A for effort.
Wow, interesting.
If you wear the spooky mask, they hate it and they will shoot nuts at you. Kind of like throwing tomatoes at someone you're unhappy with. Okay. They don't say what, I guess.
What is they?
The little young Deku.
Yeah, okay.
It says they will just start dancing around or they will just stare at you. So you have one of five reactions. Yeah. I love that because it's just so random.
Yeah, I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah.
Have you been there? Are they different sizes? If they're young Deku, or are they, I mean, I have no idea. I feel like I should Google it, but I try not to do that when we're
recording. they don't have the longish leave hair. They kind of are tapered at the top.
Wow.
And it looks like I don't know if it's a dress or a robe of leaves.
Wow.
Yeah, you'll have to look it up. Man. It's amusing, yes.
I'm going in on my Switch tonight. I'm going to go into Nintendo 64 app and see what I can find. That's fun. That's cool.
Yeah, and I do want to point out, in case it's not obvious or I take it for granted, it is as young Link, because you can't wear the mask as adult Link.
Wait, you never put masks on as adult Link?
Mm-mm.
I've never put that together.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I just never noticed.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Even the bunny. Because I guess once you become adult Link, you're just like, all right, on a mission or something. You know, I don't know.
Can you help jog my memory? Uh-huh. In the mask game, this is an aside, you have to give different masks to different people. Mm-hmm. I don't remember who receives the skull mask.
No, I always got two or three masks in, and then I kind of never got much further. It's always the Keaton mask first.
Yep.
You know, everybody does that. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, I think I've made it to the Mask of Truth. Obviously, you know, most people get the bunny one. I don't remember where that is, two or three. It's been a while.
Wait, oh, the bunny you give to the Running Man. I as you were speaking, I remembered. You give the skull mask to the skull kid, one of the skull kids.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, in the Lost Woods.
Yes, correct.
The one that hangs out on the trunk or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you give the spooky mask to the little boy in the graveyard.
So he can be scary, yeah.
Yeah, scary. That's right. So what about you?
Well, I don't know. I feel like, that was awesome. I think one of the things, I mean, the first thing I had... Well, let's do this one. I'll do kind of a halfway up one. Just talking about the Deku King in Majora's Mask. The Deku King. He's the one that gets he gets upset and he's captured some people. And even I think he's even captured a monkey. And they're very misunderstood. And the one thing that's interesting about the Deku the Deku King and by extension all the Deku in Majora's Mask is that, you know, we just started this episode saying like, oh, they've become nice finally, Majora's Mask. Well, not really. You actually have to pretend to be a Deku to even go into their kingdom. They're not super happy if you're a human and you're around.
They're a little xenophobic.
Xenophobic. Okay, yeah. 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 And so the king is, you know, very misinformed and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, he thinks the monkey kidnapped his daughter.
Yes, that's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And how do you actually prove that he didn't? I can't quite remember that part.
I think it's because you find her.
You just find her. You go, no, here she is.
It wasn't the monkey.
It wasn't the monkey. Yeah, that's right. The Deku King. Well, the reason I put the Deku King on my favorites list here is maybe he's not exactly my favorite, but what he stood for in the game development point of view of actually creating a culture, having the Zoras always had a king or whatever. Now the Deku can finally have a king. Granted, it's in Termania. To this day, I still accidentally say Termania.
I kind of like Termania, actually.
Yeah. But... Well, I said Termania a lot in like season one, and boy, did I get the feedback about it. But that one actually makes sense. I was actually making up a new word. Termania is not Termina. So in Termina, but the idea that we at least have a king and we have a little bit of a culture was cool to me.
I love it.
So I just wanted to throw him in there. He's kind of a jerk, but like, you know,
yeah.
I'm not like, oh, I can't go wait to see the king, but I thought it was like notable to put him in.
I agree. I'm glad you brought that up. He's amusing and... His head is huge.
Yeah.
Or his crown, I guess.
You know,
rather.
I think it's supposed to look like a crown, but I think it's technically like a big old bulb on his head. like leaves in a bulb that would turn into something, truly.
And that's when we see that the Deku can look very different as well.
You're right. And that's something that I'd like to, we almost have to go to break, but I'd like to get into this on the other half of the break. Where and why and how the Deku look different. Mm-hmm. I have thoughts. And some of that's expressed in some of my other Deku picks here.
I can't wait.
Maybe we do go to break. It's like a few minutes early, but I say we just do it and we come back so we can like jump into this.
Thank you for listening to our Deku episode.
The first half of it.
Yeah.
That felt like a goodbye
there,
Celeste.
That was all the Deku. I'm just kidding.
Well, that's both of them.
There are many more, we promise.
There are more, and then it gets complicated because I have some Deku that I feel like is questionable if they're Deku or not. But anyways, we'll come back from the break.
All right.
Just a bit. We'll see you.
Daniel and Chris here from the Turn by Turn podcast. We're excited to announce that our season 2 is going to be starting up. Something special about this season is that we're going to be talking with indie RPG game developers about their games, and they've been nice enough to give us screenshots and videos that we've attached to the YouTube. So while you're listening, you can also check out that and see what the games look like, as well as hearing the creators talk about their games. We have a lot of really interesting stuff in store, and Chris is on this ad too. Anything else to add?
It's very, very exciting to be talking to lots of game developers, learning about how to make a game, how to release a game, and we still make sure to cover lots and lots of your favorites, so make sure you tune in.
Thank you for listening. Bye.
All right, maybe we should write something down.
I think it sounded fairly organic.
Yeah, it did.
Hey, Hey, this is TC.
And this is Jim from The Studio Demands It,
a bi-weekly screenwriting podcast where every episode we conceptualize and craft an entire screenplay based on the demands of one of our listeners acting as a studio.
From hypothetical sequels of popular franchises
to reboots or reimaginings of films that deserve a fresh chance
to hypothetical films that simply must be brought into existence.
Join the creative process over at studiodemandsit.com. Hope to see you there. See you.
Well,
well, I can't see us.
Hope to hear them there?
Hope to hear us there.
Yep.
All right, we are back from the break. And Celeste, I don't know, do you want to go next?
Yes. So this one, I guess, is also kind of obvious. The Deku Butler, who's also in Majora's Mask, since you were speaking about the Deku King or King Deku.
I totally have the butler on here too. Let's do it.
Yeah. He, if you read about the description of the butler on different Zelda websites, apparently the king cannot be bothered to do anything for himself. So he has this suffering butler who comes across as very logical and level-headed. And he's very worried about how the king is treating this monkey, but he can't calm him down. Nobody can calm him down. I would argue he is one of the most fleshed out Deku.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Well, because you interact with him a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. So you learn more about him. You care. I feel as though he's a character you should care about.
He has a bit more of an iconic look as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing that's interesting is there's a little bit of artistic license with some of these Deku. And I guess we'll talk about like where they come from and how they come from in a bit. But you know, one thing that I notice about the Deku Butler is that he's less leafy and more bushy. Does that sound right? Like his hair is more like bushes than it is just like weird leaves hanging down, which is
little
like
circles.
Oh my gosh. Maybe he's a bit more manicured. Maybe he waters himself a little bit more and has proper green leaves up on his head. And
yes.
You know what I mean? He's trimming them into these little buns that he has.
I think he has a little mustache too.
He does. I don't know. I'm looking at it right now. I'm actually looking at a picture of him right now and I don't know if they look particularly leafy. Maybe they're like viney and kind of like long green leaves. But of course, all the Deku have the red glowing eyes and the weird circle mouth that spits out seeds. The Deku Butler is interesting. We also kind of by extension maybe need to speak about his son.
Yes, yes. You talk with him because the Deku princess tells you, hey, the Deku Butler wants to see you. Thank you for rescuing me and everything. And you can have this race with him. And he talks about how he and his son used to race. And you're like, oh, your son. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
At the end of the game, during the credits, you see him mourning. He's kind of, his arms are shaking as he's kneeling down before this kind of, I don't know if carcass is the right word.
I think we could say that. It's a bit much, but I get it. Yeah, like, you know, like a, it's a little bit, yeah.
This empty shell.
Of a tree. Of a bush or a tree that you actually see in the beginning of the game, you don't really think about it too much.
Yes, and in fact, I think Tattle says, "Oh, this figure makes me very sad," or something.
She even says, "It looks like you a little bit because you're still in Deku form."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Tattle recognizes that it's like Deku, you know.
And the butler says, "You remind me of my son."
There it is. Well, anyways, I think what we're thinking is that I think it's almost common knowledge at this point that, well, we were talking about masks in the spirit episode, weren't we, actually?
Mm-hmm.
And in Majora's Mask, a mask that will literally transform you, and I guess Link, will literally transform Link into a different form. Those masks need to be empowered or imbued with a spirit of a living creature. In other words, when Link gets the Zora mask in Majora's Mask, he meets a Zora who is dying, and that Zora basically says, here, take my spirit and, you know, make this mask. Okay. And a very similar thing happens with the Gorons. What's interesting about Majora's Mask is that Link doesn't meet a dead character or a dying character for his Deku mask. In fact, he gets transformed as a Deku by Skull Kid wearing Majora's Mask right in the beginning. He doesn't even know why or how.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you read between the lines, it's decided that the butler's son probably met a terrible fate by way of Majora's Mask on Skull Kid. And that somehow that character was, defeated. What's the nicest way of saying this?
David.
What?
You just blew my mind.
What?
when the happy mask salesman says, "You've met with a terrible fate, haven't you?" Is he talking to Link or is he talking to the butler's son?
Maybe he thinks it's the butler's son.
Mm-hmm.
Dang.
You just blew my mind when you said, "Oh, the butler's son has met with a terrible fate."
Perhaps. So, I was just trying to do a little callback to that line. Just kind of, but yeah, maybe there's something there.
This iconic line now takes on a different meaning to me.
You know, and even, you know, when you think about, I'll just say Zora Link and Goron Link in Majora's Mask, they basically do look like the spirits of the other characters. They just kind of have a Link hat on.
Mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know what I mean?
And a little green.
Yeah, they're a little greener and they have that Link hat. But for the most part, the Zora does look like the Zora that was dying on the... Zora Link does look like the Zora that was dying on the beach. So maybe Deku Link, with the big old head and stuff, really actually does look a lot like the butler's son.
Because so many of the characters you run into, depending on who you're dressed as or taking the form of, they're like, "Oh, hey, Darmani. Hey, McCall."
Yeah, that's right. Oh, thank you for reminding me of their names. I was skirting left and right there. I couldn't quite remember.
So many names.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. So I guess we could assume that Deku Link looks pretty much like the sun. Yeah. And you can't. Yeah, it's sad. I'm glad that they allow us to infer that that's what's going on, because actually that's pretty tragic and pretty evil if Majora or Majora's Mask attacked this Deku boy to make a mask. We don't actually see Majora like put the mask on Link, but maybe, I don't know. I don't want to dig into that too much. But
another deep dive, see?
Another deep dive. Turns into a deep dive, but that's all right. That's okay.
I need your next one.
So my next one is, I mean, it's in the name. I wasn't going to include it. What? The Great Deku Tree?
Yeah, I don't have him on my list.
You just made a motion. Celeste just put her hands on her heart when I was saying this.
Oh, because I love him.
So he's a Deku. The Great Deku Tree is at Deku. He's just like the best Deku. He grew the most. Do Deku scrubs or Deku creatures eventually turn into trees? Can there be a Deku bush? Can there be a Deku tree? Can there be a... You see where I'm going with this?
Because there's a Deku sprout.
Yeah.
Who takes on the new form of...
You're absolutely
Deku
right.
Tree.
And eventually that Deku sprout would probably grow into a tree as well. So Deku are very interesting because they kind of come from and are informed by where and how they seed, I think, a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I think they are grown.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. For example, the Deku sprout, I think, is a tree, will be a tree.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So,
why are there mean Deku? Did they follow Ganondorf? But you run into them, unless they're possessed.
So there are some Deku in, it's one of the multiplayer games. I can't remember if it's Four Swords or Triforce Heroes, but there are some Deku that literally speak about worshiping Ganon.
They're fallen angel types.
Yeah, maybe. So we have Zora that are, some are mean and some are not. And in some of the Zelda games, including A Link Between Worlds, explore that with pretty good fidelity, with pretty, you know, they actually kind of, you know, there's even story reasons where the Queen Zora says, "Listen, some of the outskirts Zoras, we're friends now, but the outskirts Zoras, they may not have this information yet. They might still attack you," as kind of like what basically the queen, not the queen, but the main female Zora in like Link Between Worlds says.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was like a really clever way to deal with some of the Zoras still being mean. It even kind of happens in Link's Awakening, the remake of Link's Awakening. I think it's realistic that the Deku don't have a particular allegiance because, okay. They're so far out there. They're in their own world. As you said, like even our Termina experience, which isn't even Hyrule, they have their own closed culture.
And they don't have a huge tree. They don't have a Deku tree.
That's true. So can the Deku tree... Does the Deku... So I think Deku, by the definition of Deku, then it's more of like it's a life form that somehow...
A sentient bush.
Is seeded. Yeah, a seed grows these things and these creatures.
But the Great Deku Tree is the one who watches over the Kokiri. So are the Kokiri... Hold on, David.
I have notes about the Kokiri here. I was going to get into it a little bit later in the episode.
Oh, wait.
Well, let's try a few more Deku and let's put a pin in the Kokiri because I think that's how this conversation ends.
Okay.
Ooh, a big old smile from Celeste over here.
Oh, is it my turn? Do I get
Well,
to...
sure. Okay. Great Deku Tree. Is there anything we want to speak about the Great Deku Tree specifically? There's also a Great Deku Tree in Wind Waker. It's very much called the Deku Tree. In Oracle of Ages and Seasons, it is not called Deku. It's the Meku Tree or whatever it is. And the other, I can't remember the other, you know, it's called something else.
What about... Okay, he is the only character in the game who speaks, I'm not sure if the correct term is Old or Middle English.
You're right. Ye fairy, blah, blah, blah.
Find. Have thou the courage.
Yeah, there it is.
He's the... So how old is he?
Like, is he actually speaking Old English?
You know, like, is he speaking like that because... He's very old.
The Great Deku Tree does not perish from old age. The Great Deku Tree perishes from Ganondorf, I guess, mm-hmm. poisoning it.
Mm-hmm. How long has he been around? How long has that Deku Tree been around?
I mean, I don't think there's anything in the game that gives us this information, but my assumption is that it's like thousands of years.
Thousands.
Like, it's been around forever, you know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah. But then that sprout grows pretty quick. Yes. If you think about it, only 7 years pass, and all of a sudden we have a sprout that's... a couple feet tall. Well, I don't know.
I don't think you see the sprout until you're an adult.
Right. That's what I'm saying. After 7 years pass, we go from no sprout to a sprout that's already 3 feet tall.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like, that's growing kind of fast if trees are thousands of years. But also, young trees literally grow faster than older trees.
Okay.
Like, you know, plants in general, mm-hmm. when they really shoot out there and then they kind of calm down, and you could have a tree that's hundreds of years old and it's still growing, but it's not shooting out like it does when it's younger. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's a little bit of a curve to the growth chart of a tree, a Deku tree.
I didn't realize we were horticulturists in this episode, but yes, love it. Or botanist. Well, that maybe deals more with flowers. I don't know.
The Great Deku Tree, are there any Deku that live inside the Great Deku Tree? There are, yeah, they're down below.
The scrubs
are down there. Mm-hmm. My next favorite, I'm just going to go there, is the Deku Baba, which I kind of dropped real quick at the beginning of this episode.
The enemy?
The enemy Deku Baba. The snappy, the Little Shop of Horrors guys, the Venus Flytrap guys that are chomp, chomp, chomp. I never thought about this until I was researching for this episode, because at one point I just said, fine. Anything with the word Deku in it is part of this species, I guess. Like, why would that happen?
Mm-hmm.
And Deku Babas popped up. And I was like, that's right. Of course we call them Deku Babas. So are they also seeds that get grown and are somewhat sentient, but maybe they get, you know, there's some Zelda lore that speaks to that the Deku, what they grow to become depends on their growing conditions a little bit. So mm-hmm. like, if the seed is planted, maybe it's not always the same kind of seed. Maybe there's many different seeds, like a bush seed, a maple mm-hmm. seed, a tree seed, mm-hmm. or whatever seed. But somehow these seeds are, again, I don't know, just imbued with the power of the Deku spirit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to get into Deku reproduction, but like, if a Deku is going to seed and those seeds drop and it grows more, that tracks for me. That's fine. That makes sense.
Okay. That does make sense. I just wonder why some turn evil.
Maybe it's a bit of a stretch, but maybe it's because they drop into bad parts of land. But I don't think that's totally, that's totally true, because like, we have a few bad guys go into the Great Deku Tree. You know, there's three Deku Babas as we go to the Great Deku Tree in Ocarina of Time. There's Deku Babas all over the forest. Maybe it's conditions. Maybe there's some seeds that are just, well, wow, are we now dealing with lineage? If there's Deku of Deku Baba, does it seed more Deku Babas? But it's still Deku in that. Maybe Deku just really is that seed that creates a slightly sentient plant,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you know, Celeste, I'm swinging for the fences here. This is a bit broad right now.
But I like it. They're one of my favorite enemies to kind of fight, because it's just a nice clean cut.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And get the stick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Every time I like kind of accidentally hit their face and I get a seed instead, I'm like, well, we're one of the stick.
That's hilarious.
Okay, Deku Babas. Well, okay. Okay. What's one of yours? I think I might have one left.
You kind of alluded to it when you were talking about the Deku Tree.
Mm.
This one doesn't have a name, but I think it's iconic. I call it the 2-3-1 Deku Scrub.
I know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
In Ocarina of Time, he's one of the first notable ones you come across in the game, and he shares how to defeat his brothers. So he's another like, spare me, spare me. But instead of exchanging goods with you or anything.
He's a traitor.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly what he says, but he's like, oh, 2-3-1, 23 is number one.
That's the code, whatever, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, you don't know what it means.
Yes, but I thought, I was always kind of fascinated and amused by him, because I'm glad you're not my brother.
Well, we have, you know... secret little traitors, not traitors, in Zelda games. There are hints of that. I can't help but think about the Bokoblin in the first Zelda game that actually gives Link money, but it's like, that's where a secret to everybody. Actually, I think you and Carlos spoke about this a little bit in
Carlos
your episode.
Carlos did speak about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've always loved this. There's a few moments. They're kind of almost famous. There's a few moments in the original Legend of Zelda game where a couple moblins, I think, technically help Link out. And then the famous line of it's a secret to everybody, which we use as our secondary line for this show, for another Zelda podcast. I just thought it was funny to say that our podcast was a secret and secret to everybody, whatever. Maybe you can find the podcast. But I digress. The moblins, I felt like, I remember encountering the Deku Scrub, the 3-2-1 Deku Scrub. And I remember thinking like, the theme of the enemy traitor that actually helps Link. Now, maybe the Deku Scrub did it because he was fighting for his own life a little bit. Link might have been just that intimidating. I don't know.
Young Link. Scary guy.
to a Deku Baba, that's
yes.
for sure. Deku Babas are like, dang. He's gonna cut my stem.
Well, what's your next one?
So my next one's Deku adjacent.
Oh?
Yeah, I was trying to think about how Deku show up in other games. The Deku Babas are all over the place, if we're including them. The Deku Scrubs are, for the most part, pretty much all over the place. Whoa! Hey, I just realized something. I want to come back to it in like 5 minutes. There
Talk
are
about
not
it now.
Deku Scrubs, well, because I want to make one other point first. There are not Deku Scrubs in Breath of the Wild. Is that right?
I don't remember seeing any.
I believe with the exception of the literal Deku tree, there isn't any.
No, that's my cat.
Okay. There isn't any Deku Scrubs at all. And that I think that's for a reason. So I want to go over to Twilight Princess and I want to speak about the Deku likes.
Okay.
I don't think they're actually Deku, but maybe they are. So a like-like, we all know what a like-like is. Like-likes, you know, suck up Link and usually steal his, they look like weird little worms and they suck up Link and they steal his
shield
or who knows what or whatever it is and they spit him back on. You always want to stay away from a like-like. A Deku-like is a like-like in Twilight Princess, and I think you mostly find them in the Forest Temple. They look like, they have the aesthetic, the texturing of a Deku plant, but if you fall into them, they basically like you. So it's a like pretending to be a Deku. So the reason I said it's Deku adjacent is because I assume that they're not part of the Deku species. But now I'm wondering if there's some, because Deku are not virus-like, but they're, you know, the idea that the Deku is really more, it can be, there can be versions of Deku, you know what I mean? As we've already explored, is there a version where a like-like, or maybe it is just a Deku pretending to be a like-like. I don't know. No, it's a like-like pretending to be a Deku. But it's very much plant-based. I don't know. Have you seen these Deku likes? I've got a picture
I'm
here.
I'm going to be honest. I am drawing a blank.
I've got a little picture. Look right there. Remember those in the Forest Temple? I know. I can't move my computer because it's all plugged in and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
there
yes,
you go.
Yes, I could.
They eat you and spit you
okay.
out.
They look kind of like poison ivy
yeah.
a little bit.
Where the heck do they fit?
Did a like-like meet a Deku and they produced?
My interpretation from their aesthetic is that they look more Deku than like-like. And I think like-likes are technically like flesh and blood animals. I think technically they don't have...
Like a leech.
They're like a leech, in my opinion, like massive leeches. Yeah. Is a Deku like a combination of these things somehow? Did a Deku seed... Did a like-like eat a Deku seed and then spit it out and then that be made a Deku Baba?
Or that's a good question.
A Deku-like? We may not need to go down this hole, but I just wanted to bring it up.
I love it. I never would have thought about that.
Well, I didn't think about it until I found Deku likes in my Deku search, and I was like, what the heck? We got to talk about that now. How does that fit in?
They're kind of forgettable, I guess. But now we have so many questions.
Now we have so many questions. So you must have one or two more.
I have two more. I have an honorable mention, but okay.
Yeah.
Then my next favorite one, the business scrubs in Majora's Mask, but I have a favorite one.
Oh, okay,
it's the first one you encounter in South Clock Town.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's so iconic. You walk up to this flower and you hear, well, you see a little text on the screen pop up, say, wait, no. Ah! And you see this Deku flying.
With a teeny tiny propeller head.
And he has like a pack, a suitcase. He's returning from some kind of journey. And apparently that's his flower.
Yeah, that's his home or something, right? His real estate.
Mm-hmm. So he sits in his private yellow Deku flower. He wants to leave town because of the moon, but cannot just leave his property there. If you give him a moon tear to give to his wife, he'll give Link the Deku flower in return.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you can use it and access different heights.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. But I really like him because I love the mechanic of like he's twirling in the air. He can fly. I want to know where he was returning from.
He's the first Deku, I guess, scrub. Either Deku, what was his technical?
Business scrub.
Business scrub, Deku business scrub. Deku business scrub that we, so when you're playing Majora's Mask, we get introduced to like Deku Link and he looks so different. So we just accept it. But he's the first Deku we see that does actually look different from the Dekus that mm-hmm. we saw in Ocarina of Time. Mm-hmm. So I remember that him being iconic in that way for me. I was like, oh, that's a Deku, but he looks different. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's flying down. And suddenly you start realizing that many of the Deku will look different throughout the whole game. Mm-hmm. And he ends up, you bump back into him in the swamp later. Isn't that right? Isn't he over on the side of Kome's boat tour shop or something?
I don't know if it's him or a separate business scrub. Could be a separate one. Might be multiple because I think there are about 6 or 7.
Yeah, that's
total
right.
In the game.
I might have accidentally always thought that was the same one.
It could be. Maybe he does because he owns a lot of real estate.
I also might have just read the text too fast. I might have been skipping some text.
But I'd love to know where he is. Like, where's his wife? Unless that's just like his rental property. That's one of his homes.
It's his apartment when he goes into town.
Mm-hmm.
When he goes to work in the big old city.
Yes, and he wants a moon tier for his wife.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where he's coming from. He does have a lot of bags. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Do you have another favorite Deku?
I think I don't, because I started getting interested in why they're... So I started thinking about every Zelda game and what were the Dekus that I liked in that game. At first I was like, what are my favorite Dekus? Mm-hmm. But then it was getting a little more difficult. So then I said, well, okay, how about this game? How about Twilight Princess? What's a Deku that I really like? And that's actually kind of how I found the Deku likes. Mm-hmm. Not really what I was expecting to find, but it's what I found. Then I thought, okay, Wind Waker, what are some of the Dekus like? And I realized that after Majora's Mask, with the exception of just Deku scrubs in general, mm-hmm. and then they kind of get a little weirdly blended with Octoroks after a while, like in Skyward Sword, are those Octoroks or Dekus that spit at you in the forest? I think they're Octoroks.
I think they are.
Anyways, I started thinking about it and I thought about the great Deku tree in Breath of the Wild. So, mm-hmm. Okay, fine. That could be another one. That's an honor. Certainly the Deku tree in Breath of the Wild, but it's so close to the Deku tree in Ocarina of Time. But that's a fun one. Let's speak about that just for a second. I like that the entire environment, that the Deku tree takes up the entire environment. You can climb on this Deku tree, which you couldn't do in Ocarina of Time. We've all tried to climb up those triangle roots in Ocarina of Time just to see if we could, and we all slipped mm-hmm, down. Mm-hmm. But this game, in Breath of the Wild, you can actually climb up and find new things. You can get up inside the Deku tree and look back out onto Hyrule. That's all awesome. So I actually didn't have this in my notes, but I would like to speak to that. And because of that, I want to give you the opportunity to say anything about the great Deku tree in Breath of the Wild 2, if you have anything to add.
I think he's kind of an honorable mention. He doesn't stick out to me as much as the one in Ocarina of Time, to be honest with you.
Sure.
Or the one in Wind Waker.
Yeah, that's right. The Wind Waker one had... So here's the thing. I was thinking about Breath of the Wild, Deku Tree, and by extension, thematically very similar to the Wind Waker one, but there's Koroks all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking, well, wait a second, is a Korok a Deku? And I found some answers, but I think you have one more Deku to mention, so let's do that.
Oh, it's an honorable mention.
That's fine.
Okay, so Link as a Deku scrub. That's my honorable mention. I think he is adorable. I love how he spins to move faster.
Sure.
And he's very quirky and charming, and I love the little mouth or nose bubbles. Like... So the game is very... It's very dark. It's very grim. There is hope at the end, of course, but I find that the Deku scrub... Link adds some whimsy in the game.
Oh, sure.
So it makes me smile.
And you know what? I think it's a good balance because as a player, I think I was in college. I think it was my first year of college when Majora's Mask actually came out. So I was basically technically like 18 or 19 years old, almost an adult, or was an adult, or whatever, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. But I remember it being kind of horrific when Link got turned into the Deku scrub in the beginning of Majora's Mask. And this, the aesthetic, the glowing eyes, everything. I was kind of like, whoa, this is horrific. This is terrible. But then his little cute little actions kind of compensate that. He waddles around. He has to jump up to grab doorknobs to open the door.
Oh, that's so cute.
And it's cute. So it does kind of keep a little, you know, a little bit of a sweet with the sour there, I think, mm-hmm. with that Deku. Because otherwise it just would have been, if you were truly just like trapped in this crazy body for the first 1 or 2 hours you're playing the game, I don't really know how long technically 3 days is in that game. Maybe it is only like 15, 20 minutes, but it feels like a long time. Mm-hmm. It feels like hours. That first time you play before the actual game kicks in. You know what I mean? That first night where the moon falls and you actually get your, is it the ocarina from Skull Kid or whatever? Anyways, that's my comment about that.
Oh, I love it. I forgot about the fact that he has to jump up to open the door. Very cute. So are we about to do some Deku deep dives?
Well, a little bit. We have a few minutes left here. I was really hard pressed. I was thinking about Breath of the Wild, then Wind Waker and all these things, even Skyward Sword. And I realized, you know what? The Kokiri or the Koroks, they originated in Wind Waker in release order. When we're talking release mm-hmm. order, games in release order, they originated in Wind Waker and they also showed up in Skyward Sword. And in Wind Waker, the lore was that the Koroks, those little leafy guys jumping around, were actually the evolution of the Kokiri. That's part of Wind Waker lore. Is that those little leafy dudes jumping around are actually what were the children, not the exact children, generations later. You know, because Wind Waker takes place way in the future, I guess, from the point of view of Ocarina of Time.
Hold up.
What?
The little hilly, and I know they're not hillians, like the humanoid.
The humanoid Kokiri elf Kokiri evolve into the Koroks in Wind Waker. Just like the Zoras evolve into the Rito. It's a thing.
I guess it seems to me it would be the reverse. Like the Korok would evolve into the Kokiri.
I concur. The Koroks feel like from a biological point of view, or from a dexterity and a fidelity mm-hmm. point of view, they seem kind of de-evolved a little bit. I don't know, but that is part of it. Hmm. Not sure why or how. I also think obviously the Zoras turning into Rito is a bit of a stretch, but that's just that Wind Waker went there with those two things. It's canon. It's lore. It's in there. The Koroks then also showed up in Skyward Sword, which I'm realizing right now, timeline-wise, is before Wind Waker. So what the heck? We've got Koroks, and then we go back to the Kokiri, and then we go back to the Koroks? Is that what happens?
My mind is kind of blown right now.
Well, yeah. It's reasons like this why I subscribe to the philosophy that Breath of the Wild is the only real one and all the rest are just stories and legends, so they don't have to totally line up. But that's kind of a cop-out, even though I do like that idea very much. But anyway, so yeah, we got release order. We've got Koroks in Skyward Sword, and then we have Koroks in Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm. Hey, did you know what Deku means?
No, what?
It's Japanese for puppet or wooden doll.
Well, that's fascinating, because I would easily categorize the Koroks as that. Wooden mm-hmm. doll? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, but sometime after Majora's Mask, for some reason after Majora's Mask, literally we get Majora's Mask where we actually get Deku as a culture. Mm-hmm. We at least see a Deku king. We see
a whole monarchy.
Yeah, monarchy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well said. The very next game, they're gone, and we get the Koroks. And I wonder why. I wonder what happened in the development of Zelda games over in our real timeline. Mm-hmm. Because basically my interpretation is, and it's even gone all the way into Breath of the Wild now, that the Koroks have kind of functionally taken the place of the Deku. And I don't know why. I wonder if you have any thoughts about that. Because all the little Koroks jumping around the great Deku mm-hmm. tree in Wind Waker and Breath of the Wild could have easily, because I thought to myself when I was thinking about Breath of the Wild, I was like, well, do those Koroks, are they little seedlings of Deku? But they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So why, I don't know what to ask, but why did the Koroks replace the Deku in the story of Zelda game development?
That's a great question. Is it okay? The Koroks are adorable. First of all, they're mm-hmm. absolutely adorable. They're kind of mischievous. Like, they don't do anything to harm Link, but they like to play games and they hide. Ha! Mm-hmm. You found me! Like, you're playing this really long game of hide and seek that you don't even realize you're part of in Breath of the Wild. Are they kind of they're kind of childlike, like the Kokiri?
Mm-hmm. The only time we see Kokiri in their like pseudo-humanoid form is Ocarina of Time.
Mm-hmm.
I think we never see them otherwise.
Mm-mm. They are not in Majora's Mask.
Right.
Or
the Deku are. Maybe. Okay, wait, why? The Deku still exists, but kind of basically as bad guys. Are there Deku in Breath of the Wild? I think there are not.
I think there is not. I'm not. The only thing that I remember spitting at me would be the Octoroks.
I think we've phased away from Deku, and really the only Deku that's still Celeste. I'm having a total moment, a total brain blank moment. Are there Deku Baba in Breath of the Wild? I think there isn't. I think I'm thinking about Skyward Sword HD right now in my recent memory.
Maybe.
The Chomp Chomps?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any in Breath of the Wild.
I think the only Deku is the Deku tree.
Yeah. Maybe the Korok's just cuter, easier to market.
Did something happen during that calamity?
Yeah, I don't
experience?
Know. Why did the Deku get phased out? That was a major observation that I made. As I was basically, I just wanted to point it out. We don't have to solve it, but I noticed that as I was going forward in time in release order for games, it was harder and harder for me to find Deku characters to the point where it actually became non-existent. Mm-hmm. And basically, they were replaced by Koroks, which technically are Kokiri.
I actually have some more information on the Deku.
That might be
interesting. They often appear as enemies, but despite their antagonistic nature, they tend to be friendly, at least when they believe it to be to their own benefit. Again, I'm going to tell you the code to defeat my brothers because I'm going to die otherwise.
Yeah,
It is rumored that a Deku Scrub's disposition can change drastically depending on the type of tree they are born from.
Well, there we go. There's something. Tree they're born from. Tree they're born from, which could be interpreted the seed that falls from that tree is what they are born from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, we might be onto something here.
Do we have any evil trees?
Well, I guess if you have one and that one seeds, like it's chicken before the egg, where did the first one come from? But like once you have one, it just keeps going, right?
But we don't really see any evil, malevolent trees in the Zelda series, do we? I mean,
maybe some of the gangly ones in Lost Woods and stuff like
that
in Breath of the Wild and some of the other things. But I don't think I would categorize them. And Link's Awakening has the same kind of spooky trees. I don't think I would categorize those as Deku in any way, though.
Skull Woods. Well, I don't think we have Deku. We don't have Deku in A Link to the Past.
I'm thinking about it.
Let me see. I don't think
whoa,
so.
Whoa. Did the Deku... Were they invented for Ocarina of Time?
Because of the Deku Tree?
Well, there was the Deku Tree. Yeah, the Deku Tree's interesting because the Deku Tree is so... such a leader, such this like omnipotent kind of, you know, mm-hmm. presence that we see it with regality and all the rest, that it doesn't line up with all the other Deku things that we experience. But I just realized something. The Deku maybe are invented for Ocarina of Time. They're used in Majora's Mask and then they're basically dropped. No wonder it was so hard to find a bunch of Deku.
Yeah. But I think they are notable to bring up. I mean, they do play a huge role in Majora's Mask. That's where they shine.
That was my trigger for us to do this episode. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about Majora's Mask, and I thought, Goron, Zora, we haven't done Deku. But in doing this episode, we've discovered that actually they're not, the rise and fall of the Deku.
And can I say that the Deku Palace theme is one of my favorite Zelda themes ever?
Ooh, I can't remember it offhand right now. Yeah.
It's very... medieval to me,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which maybe that explains why the Deku King is like he is. Maybe he's very old fashioned.
Oh, I see. Sure.
Very medieval.
Sure.
I don't know.
I wonder why. But anyways, that's interesting. So at this point, the Kokiri have taken over as Koroks, and I think Koroks will remain.
I'm surprised neither of us brought up the Deku Princess.
Well, I had her in my list, but we kind of mentioned her when we were talking about the king.
Yes.
If you have anything you'd like to say about her, I'm cool with it.
I'm amused that you have to put her in a bottle to bring her back home and you have to dump her out in front of her dad.
I feel like that was a, you know, they didn't have very long to make Majora's Mask and the behind the scenes, the way they write the code, the way you can store things in bottles. There's no size limit to that, and they mm-hmm. literally can store a variable in a data set. And I think they were just like, okay, we need to carry her back. Well, we're not going to model a backpack. We're not going to make a new system. I think they just wedged her into that system. I agree completely. It's pretty bonkers that you shove her into a bottle if mm-hmm. we're thinking about it literally.
And then she gets really mad at her dad and starts jumping on him.
I forgot.
That is one of the funniest scenes in a Zelda game. This monkey did not kidnap me. What are you doing?
Oh, man, that's good. I don't want to put you on the spot, Celeste, but do you think you can do our outro?
Oh, my God.
It doesn't really. There's no right or wrong way of doing
there's
this.
There's no right or wrong way. Okay, thank you. Well, I had a lot of fun talking about the Deku. I'm really happy they could get the spotlight that I think they do deserve. They're important to the Zelda lore and the gameplay.
At times, a bit of a conundrum.
It is. It is. So if you want to listen to other episodes, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. You can even go to our website at anotherzeldapodcast.com, where we also have blogs and articles about all kinds of topics from our awesome blog writers and some guest writers. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at anotherzeldapod. Instagram is anotherzeldapodcast. We also have Another Zelda Podcast. It's a Secret to Everybody on Facebook.
That's right. That's right. Wow, you said the whole text string. That's, that's absolutely the name of the group. You're right.
Am I forgetting anything?
No, I think that's it. YouTube. Yeah, yeah, you know, we're on YouTube. Basically, the truth is, if you just Google Another Zelda Podcast, we're in those. You'll find us. There's links. Links shall be found. people can find me on Twitter at Raptor Paint, Twitter and Instagram. Celeste, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Fairy Crypt.
Wonderful, wonderful. And yeah, I guess that's it. So, we're going to record another episode in a few weeks where we're doing, what is it? It was, oh, favorite shops. That'll be a fun one.
Hey, perfect for the holiday season, right?
Yeah, right. It'll be, I think that one might come out after Thanksgiving, so it might be right in that like mega shopping time that happens in our culture here in America.
Kismet.
So I'll see you then.
All right. Okay. Bye.